Welcome to Insta Poetic Justice, the first podcast of its kind discussing the ever-evolving terrain of poetry and technology and how these two have merged together to create the subgenre that is Insta Poetry. Here I will interview poets about poets as we weigh in on the positives and negatives of this new literary phenomenon. I'm your host, Amy Sophia Mayer. You can check out my poetry books at www.paganpoetess.com. Supporting me via my published works is the best way to ensure all these podcasts remain free and accessible to everyone. And now, on with the show. Welcome back, poetry lovers. This is the second episode of Insta Poetic Justice. I'm your host, Amy Sophia Mayer, and today I am joined by the poet Matthew Phoenix from Down Under. Hi, Matt.
Hey.
Some of you may know Matt on Instagram, aka The Rambling of a Millennial. As always, with each guest speaker, his info will be in the description box of this episode. And as mentioned in the first episode, we will start with an interview of Matthew, then go on to discuss the designated Insta poet of this episode, this time being Tyler Not Gregson, and then we'll finish up with the fun hashtag Insta poetry exercise. So, are you ready, Matt?
Ready.
Alrighty then. Well, first, I have to ask, because I am an totally ignorant American, where in Australia are you from?
I'm in Melbourne, Australia.
Okay. So one of the larger cities.
Yeah. It's a bit crazy here at the moment. We're in what we call a stage 4 lockdown because our the COVID-19 is kind of just outbreaking a lot down here. So.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, I'm personally in the state of Indiana, and our governor has put in a mask mandate. So, like, things are slowly starting to reopen, but, you know, everyone has to wear a mask, like, all the time.
Yeah, it's the same with us. We can't go anywhere without one.
Mm-hmm. So, are you originally from Melbourne, or...?
Yeah, I actually came from a beach place called Torquay, which is mm-hmm. Australia's surf capital. Mm-hmm. And then eventually just migrated to Werribee because there's more work.
Okay. Well, wonderful. I know on your Instagram profile, it said, you know, Victoria, Australia, but I'm just like, I don't know what that means. I know nothing of Australia. I'm better than most Americans that I studied Arabic and I could name like almost every Middle Eastern country, but I know nothing when it comes to Australia or New Zealand.
Oh, no, that's okay. We're so small and new compared to all other countries. So there's time.
Alrighty then. Yeah, and I remember you telling me in our correspondence that you work at a bookshop, and that just seemed like such a poet thing to do. So just tell me about that, because you seem to fit that very stereotypical image.
I know, and that was totally the intention. So I work in a bookstore called Dimmicks, which is Australia's largest book chain.
Okay.
And yeah, it's the perfect job for me. It's not my like career goal in life, but it's mm-hmm. the perfect place to be in a standstill until I reach that goal.
Right. Wonderful. So what's your favorite spot to visit in your own country and what makes it special to you?
Definitely home. So Torquay, specifically Torquay. Bell Beach. Mm-hmm. Just the surfer in me will just always call that home.
Okay. Wonderful. And I have to ask, because again, I'm such an ignorant American. How do you surf with all those, you know, poisonous animals, the box jellyfish, the... blue-ringed octopus, like, it terrifies me.
Well, that's mostly in Western Australia with all of those, like, crazy animals, especially the shark attacks. But, in Bells Beach, because it's so rocky, you hardly find any of those kind of animals there, which is good. But the rocks then are there to, you know, give you a real good time.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, because I, in the summertime, you know, where I am in Indiana, the worst thing I have to worry about is the copperhead snakes, which are the main venomous snake, you know, in this area of the U.S.
Ooh, brown copperhead snake. That sounds so exotic. All we have to worry about is just the brown snake, which is our most venomous. But I think we've got like two or three more that we need to worry about, but I don't know their names.
Yeah, no. They usually don't come out until late August, but they've been coming out super, super early this year. And I don't know if that's part of like lockdown and just people not moving around a lot outside and they're emerging more. But yeah, there's just a lot of them this year.
Oh, yeah. They could probably feel what's going on. They're like, yeah, I need to get out of here.
Well, it's like the dolphins in, you know, the Venice canals. It's like, oh, they finally peaced out. We can come.
It's so true. But it's winter down here, so we don't have to worry about that now. But they'll start to come around December when summer comes in.
Oh, yes, of course. That's right. I'm a practicing pagan. I should have already had that in my mind, that the seasons are reversed.
Oh, that's all right.
So, going into poetry, when did you write your first poem and how old were you?
It's funny. I hated poetry. I didn't like...
Really?
Yeah, when I was younger, I didn't like it at all. I actually hated reading. At this moment that our high school made us read books to learn from, because I was forced, when I'm forced to do something, I instantly hate it. And it wasn't until I was, I think like 20 or 21, I picked up my first book out of like my own choice. And that's when it stopped for me. And then around, I think 25, mm-hmm. I started writing down my thoughts and naturally it just started to rhyme. And I was like, is this poetry? And I showed some of my friends and they responded really well to it. And then that's when I started the Instagram. But not without, you know, deleting it and starting it again, because I'm an absolute perfectionist. And even now, I still am not happy with my Instagram and the way it is formatted. So, but I can't delete all that history now. So I'm just going to continue and try and morph it into what I want it to be. But yeah, it was around 25, 26.
Okay, wonderful. And for our listeners, just like in our previous episode with Caitlin, I found Matthew via Augie Bookshelf's Insta Poet Anthology. He was one of the contributors. And after reading it, I'm like, oh my God, this is so good. And so when trying to recruit guest speakers, this was the immediate anthology I went to and went to try and recruit everybody.
That's amazing. I was so flattered. I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to go tell my mom. That's the first thing I did.
Yeah, and actually, I want to read my favorite poem that you contributed to that anthology.
Oh, awesome. Go for it.
Yeah. Early morning, winter cold or summer breeze, a hot cup full and it warms my heart with ease, bitter alone but sweet in flavor. Just add sugar, honey, maple, whatever, smooth as butter with every sip I take, no judgments as I surrender to its cordial embrace, a ritual which my hands and there you stand, an elixir of life to make the day less bland.
You know, that's my favorite one that I wrote too, because I just love coffee so much.
Yeah, I'm not a coffee person myself. I'm definitely much more of a tea drinker, but I liked it. It definitely is an outlier for me because I usually like super like natural, super poetic, super flowery language. I don't tend to like poetry as much about very simple modern day moments, but you did it in such a way that makes me love it so much.
Oh, that's so cool to hear. It's probably the only one that I've truly felt confident. Like, yep, yeah, I'm sure that everyone's going to like this one. All of them, I'm like 60 to 80% sure. But that one, I'm like 100%. And if someone doesn't like it, I'm like, that's okay. I still like it.
So that's on page 69 of Insta Poet. And for everyone listening, I highly recommend you go and buy it. It's on Amazon and it's great.
Is I'm trying to get it in our bookstore, but the suppliers don't go through our buying chain, which is really frustrating. So I'm going to keep trying to do that.
Really? Why can't it go through the chains?
Well, it's not distributed here in Australia. So Australia hasn't bought the rights to distribute Instapot. And we buy through an American supplier called Ingram. And they haven't got the rights for it either. It's just Amazon. And we can't buy it, which is frustrating.
That's frustrating. It's what, like, I personally, I like to self-publish all my poetry because I like the creative control. But even though I publish it on Amazon, I don't do like the Kindle Direct because I do want the option to like publish my books elsewhere.
That's such a good idea. And I've seen your covers, by the way. They're beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I designed them myself using the free version of Canva.
Oh, amazing. No, it looks professional. And I'm like, I'm going to have to buy a copy.
thank you. No, I was going really detailed and weird, but then my husband kept telling me, no, Amy, the cover needs to be like simple. It's poetry genre. The genre is very minimalist and just less is more. And so I'm so glad I followed his advice.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because I think it's a winner. So, oh, good on your husband.
Yeah. So, all righty then. Here's another question.
Yeah.
Do you think someone could be a writer if they don't feel emotions strongly?
Absolutely. Because no matter what you do, as soon as you start writing, you will feel emotions strongly. Unless you're, I guess, maybe a psychopath. that can't feel emotions, like, clinically. But yeah, it's that I wouldn't worry about that, because if you start to write, you will feel those things, because writing, as soon as you write the words, it finds a way to help you express them or release them. So I don't think that should be an issue. You just got to get started.
Yeah. Yeah. I asked that question just because, you know, I was searching all over the internet for like questions to ask, like writers, authors, and poets and that sort of thing. And this one came up and I thought it was an interesting one in relation to Insta poetry, because the Insta poetry genre gets a lot of flack, I think, for being too emotional and not enough literary structure.
You know what, though? I tend to agree with that statement just a little. Even with me, I tend to be a little too emotional. I'm just like, come on, I'm a writer. I've now studied writing. Where's the, you know, the flow, the punchiness, the, like you said, the literary formats. So I, even myself as a perfectionist, I do see that point, but I think it becomes benign once you put the emotion in it, because it's all about the feeling. Poetry is when you feel it, it's, oh my gosh, that's it. So yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a healthy balance of the two. And, you know, of course, different people approach it differently.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what was an early experience where you learned that language had power?
It actually was until recently. So I discovered that a little bit when I started writing poetry and writing short stories. But recently, I had a very big incident with my best friend of 16 years. And it was just such a big betrayal for me that I didn't know how to cope with that. And then poetry provided that release, that avenue of release. But yeah, that was such a devastating moment, because I thought that this person would be my best friend forever. And what they did was just horrible. So yeah, that was the moment where I truly, and that was about 2 years ago. So that was the moment I truly realized where I could, poetry was such a powerful thing.
Oh, interesting. So for you, the power was very much healing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Especially because, so I don't want to get too personal, but what this person did in a vulnerable moment released not flattering pictures of me. And that, not only was it not flattering, but it just, I'm not particularly comfortable with my body in that way at the moment. So I'm disappointed I put myself in that situation, but I'm very disappointed in them that they felt the need to share it as a laugh rather than protect me, which I thought that this person would do. So, yeah.
I'm so sorry you had to go through that. That is just the way technology is nowadays.
Gosh, yeah. Thank God it's non-existent. It was more of a story rather than a post, but enough people to kind of get the backlash of those
things. Oh dear. Oh, I'm so sorry. No. But I'm glad you were able to find poetry as an outlet for that.
Oh yeah. And all I can say is to everyone who's listening, don't drink too much. Alcohol does bad things.
Yes, it does. While I'm sipping a glass of Moscato right now.
Yeah. No, leisurely is fine. Just binging, not fine.
No, yeah. Of course. So in your poetry, do you try more to be original or to deliver to readers what they want?
A bit of both. I feel, for me, when I read poetry, I love rhymes. I love it when they connect full circle. So I feel like I try and appeal to people who feel the same way I do. So that's always my goal. But when I write poetry, I find myself not rhyming and just expressing, which does annoy me a bit, because that's where you lose the literary formats, I guess. But once you let it flow, and like I said, if the feeling's there, and like you said, the balance, it's fine. But no, I try and always appeal to the rhymes. I love a good rhyme. Another favorite poet of mine who does that a lot is Aaron Hansen. Oh, amazing. I could read their stuff all day.
Oh, no, I haven't heard of them. Are they also Australian or?
I actually don't know. I don't know. I don't even know if that's a boy or a girl, to be honest. I just know
the name. I've just never heard of them.
No, and I've got all their books, but I don't know who they are.
All right, then. Yeah, I guess I sort of asked that because I think for everyone, it's a balance of wanting to be original and, you know, satisfy yourself artistically, but also, you know, especially if you want to sustain yourself as an artist, you know, for a living, you do have to take that into consideration. And, you know, another way that Insta poetry gets a lot of flack is, you know, the idea that people only post, you know, what they think will get follows and, you know, and not really, and thinking that, and the impression that because it's on Instagram, that completely overrides what the like structure of the poem would be, which I tend to not think of it that way, because I think technology, like if Shakespeare had Instagram, he would be posting some of his sonnets too. It's just a means to, you know, showcase your work.
Oh, exactly right. And I've been through, anyone who becomes an Insta poet or writes their short stories on social media goes through that experience of, oh yeah, this sounds great, this will get followers. You know, we'd all be lying if we didn't say we wanted a bit of a following to kind of support that medium. But once you let that, because I don't have very many followers, but once you let that go, it doesn't matter anymore. And you're so right. It's not something that people need to really worry about with Insta poetry. Just if you like what you like it. If you don't, move on.
Mm-hmm. And I had a point I was going to make, but I forgot it. Ooh, will it come back to me?
I should have said that.
This is great. This is really good material. But let me just, okay, we'll move on. And if it'll come back, it'll come back.
Perfect.
So what does literary success look like to you?
Working in a bookstore and knowing the book business, literary success for me is being published by one of the bigs. So, you know, Penguin, Random House, HarperCollins, Simon Schuster, mm-hmm. anybody who will take you, your manuscript and say, yep, here's your contract, let's go. To me, that's a form of a vanity form of the success. Mm-hmm. And then of course there's the spiritual, side, which is like just being happy with the material you write and not mm-hmm. letting the perfectionist in your head tarnish that just because it doesn't sound perfect to you. It could sound perfect to someone else. So yeah.
No, I totally agree. And definitely I kind of am torn between the two because I self-publish my poetry collections because it's just like, it's not that I'm against, you know, certain constructive criticism, but I just don't, again, publishing houses, you know, don't always want to take risk. And I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing because, you know, publishing houses are not charity. They do have to take marketing into consideration just to have the ability to sustain themselves. But I just didn't want to deal with all that, particularly for my poetry, which is just very emotional. Like I tend to be more, if I finally get around to writing one of my novels, then yeah, definitely I would go the like traditional publishing route because you just, with narration, a novel that's 50 to 90,000 words, like pacing and all plot and all of those things need to be checked over.
Oh, of course, yeah. And look, I tend to agree with the poetry bit because you've put such emotion into it and you know that, like, if you know that poem is one that has to be there, but then an editor goes, no, I don't like that, take that out. You're going to be like, hold up, no. So I tend to agree with some of that, which is now interesting. It changes my perspective on literary success. But anyway. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, literary success that notion can constantly be shifting all the time. Like for a long time, I was just like, oh, my literary success is being the full-time writer and being able to make a living. But I have a full-time job and a career that, you know, that I'm pretty happy with. And again, being self-published gives me that creative control. And it's like, do I want to give that up? Because I have a career to sustain myself. So do I want to give up that creative control? I don't know. I'm leaning towards not so much right now, but that could change either tomorrow or next year.
Yeah, who knows? And like I said earlier, I love my bookstore job, even though it's not my end goal. But yeah, I don't, especially with poetry, I don't know how much control I'd want to give over either. And it makes me wonder how much control other poets have given over, especially with someone like, I hope I say her name right, Rupika Kapoor.
Ruby Core, I think, yeah.
Yeah, because she writes about heavy personal experiences of assault. So I wonder Indeed. How much of that is everything is her or how much is edited. It makes me wonder. I don't believe for a second that it's not genuine because when you read it, it's like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's an interesting question too.
Yeah, with Rupi Kaura, yeah, again, I don't know how much she has to concede, you know, with editors and all that. But yeah, I've read some of her stuff and, you know, it is super like deep and super like, especially towards, you know, women of color from more traditional cultures and what they go through and all the things that they don't talk about.
Yeah, exactly. And so many young teenage girls come into the store where I work and buy it. And I'm just like, you're aware of what this talks about, not deterring them away from the material because it's great, but like, just be aware that this is heavy stuff. And
yeah, it's not all sunshine and roses.
Exactly. As it just, you know, the cover is all flowers and bees. And I just like, you know, you should also be happy not reading a lot of depressing things. They're like, no, we know. And I'm like, okay, good. As long as you know.
Wonderful. So I think you mentioned the one writer that you said had all his books, but what books or authors have most influenced your own writing?
Aside from poetry, I'm a big young adult reader still. I'm 28 and I haven't gotten over the young adult phase in my life. My favorite author who just changed the way I read forever is Brigid Kimera. She currently writes the Cursebreaker series, but her original young adult series, The Elementals, which is a 5-book series.
Oh, yeah. I think I've heard of them.
So good. It will never not be my favorite series. It's 5 brothers with superpowers trying to avoid people trying to kill them. It's everything you want. And each one has a love story. It's fantastic. So that's definitely, and because it's so flowy, simple and action packed, it's changed the way that I write from being too emotional to being more fun. So yeah, she's not by any means the most amazing literary writer, but for me, she's perfect. So yeah.
Yeah. No, it's, yeah, I totally believe in a healthy balance between commercial and literary fiction. And those lines often, you know, blur a lot more than some critics give it credit for.
Oh, I agree, because it's fun. And, you know, when critics come along and it's like, oh no, that's child's play. It's like, you don't like having fun? This is fun. But if we wanted to go classical, I love Crime and Punishment. It's my favorite classical novel.
I have not yet read it. I found a free audiobook on it that I've downloaded that I need to get to at some point, but I have not read it yet.
Oh, you're gonna love it. The psychological aspects of the guilt through that story, amazing.
Of course. Yeah, I'm currently binge reading all the Jane Austen novels because I'm going to do a podcast mini series with my sister all about the Jane Austen stuff.
That is so cool. I have to listen to that.
Yeah. Yeah. For everyone listening, if you're interested too, that podcast will air on September 4th, my sister's birthday. So check it out.
That is perfect.
So I think you touched upon this a little bit, but this is what I'm asking all of my guest speakers in light of the current times. Has COVID-19 impacted your writing process? And if so, how?
Yes. I've found myself to be not motivated for anything at all. Like if you look at my Instagram, I haven't posted anything in quite a while. It's just I have a serious case of writer's block. Nothing. Words come and feelings come, but they don't blend together like they did in the past. And I honestly don't know how to get over it. So I'm currently working through that. And I think just with, I can't draw inspiration from anywhere. There's only so much you can draw inspiration from in between four walls of your room. Especially because outside of work, my end goal is, I went to drama school. So my dream is to become an actor. I can't do any of that. I literally finished filming a horror film, an indie horror film, just before lockdown started here. And I thank God we finished it. Not being able to do anything that I love is really, really annoying me.
Yeah, no, I can totally understand that. Like, I'm doing, like, despite lockdown, like, my writing's going pretty okay. But just because a lot of my hobbies, like, again, reading classical literature and those things, they're all things I can do inside. But I can totally get from the perspective of if you're a hardcore theater person and not having that outlet, because I almost was that person, because I went to high school in a little place called Ashland, Oregon, on the west coast of the U.S., and they are known for their traditional Elizabethan theater and for hosting their Shakespeare Festival. So the culture of the town is very theatrical, and I always wanted to get into it, but just for circumstances were such that I couldn't, like, make the time commitment for those sort of extracurricular, you know, activities. But, yeah, I I remember in high school when I still had a foot in that world, and just what it would be like if I was still doing that and I couldn't. Like, ugh.
My gosh, this is why I half resent growing up in Australia, because they, you know, some great Australian actors come to America and make a name for themselves, but there is no culture like that here, and it frustrates me. It's just, where was my American growing up experience? I need that in my life. And it's gone, and I'll never get it, and it frustrates me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. But yeah, I think that's why Hollywood still leads the industry, because they have that culture indented in everything. It's amazing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, last question. As a writer, what would you choose as your mascot, avatar, / spirit animal?
A seal.
A seal. Please, yeah. Elaborate.
I'm a very nice and determined person, and I'll do anything for anyone. But when it comes to myself, I'm super lazy. And just, yeah, I like to lay around all day. So if
lay
I
lay on the rock.
Yeah. And I don't know if this is going to be weird, but I'm infatuated with mermaids. I have this big mermaid tattoo on my arm. The folklore of mermaids just fascinates me.
I'm sure it's significantly stronger, like in Australia, with the just seafaring history, right?
You would think so, but there's actually no mermaid folklore part of any indigenous history or anything like that. There's a sea witch, I think, in the Aboriginal kind of Dreamtime legends. But she's not pretty, and she's very scary. But yeah, I think a seal, because, and they're cute, so everyone would love approaching me.
Yeah, they are adorable. So yeah, cute. For my spirit animal, I would probably be a raven, just because I know my Patronus from Harry Potter. I took the test. It's a raven.
Yeah, Ravenclaw.
Yeah, a raven. And also, I am a big fan of Edgar Allan Poe. So he's a big influence on me. So yeah, his poem, The Raven.
Naturally. Oh, you know what? Just by hearing your voice, I do see that raven. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So now we can move on to the three poems you selected. Would you like to read them for us?
Oh, yeah, of course. All right. This is the first one. Mm-hmm. I am at the mercy of love, constantly in despair for the possession of one's heart, fantasizing about endless possibilities, dreams that will never come true. They have my heart, and they don't even know it, inflicting pain so effortlessly. I know the outcome. I'll remain enslaved to them, because I know no other love.
Ooh, that's good. And again, the whole theme of unrequited love. And again, you've touched, you know, what everyone's gone through with that preliminary stage of, like, you were constantly fantasizing about the infinite possibilities of what road this could potentially go down, but you haven't even taken the first step yet.
Oh, absolutely. And I wrote that poem particularly when I think for me, I formed my very first true crush, not like a high school one, like a true one.
Mm-hmm.
And just, yeah, when nothing came of it, my heart broke and they didn't even know it. So yeah, that was weird.
Mm-hmm. All right. All right. Can you move on to the second one, please?
Yeah. We could have everything and still feel like we have nothing, but there will always be something. Be that something, because they have it all.
Yes. Simple but sweet. Again, the idea that what truly makes one happy, and can anything really fill the void?
I don't need to elaborate on that one. You pretty much said it.
Yeah. So yeah, poem number three.
Yeah, number three. To walk on a gravel road seems daunting with bare feet. Instincts will guide us to kicks. We avoid discomfort and get to our destination faster. But what did we miss along the way? Freedom without sneakers, a challenge in discomfort, the reward of success when you cross the finish line barefoot.
Interesting. I'm mulling it over, just the notion of that we just try to block out everything that's uncomfortable to us, and maybe do we always internalize the valuable lessons that occurred from such discomfort?
Yeah, and just the hard work too. Like, I've always, as an actor, I've always found myself trying to be like, if only I was just discovered. But then you miss out on all the lessons that will make you a stronger, better actor when you get to that goal. So missing out on those hardships and experiences can stunt your growth, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Matt, for sharing those with us. And now we will move on to our discussion of Tyler Knott Gregson. So before I read his like little Wikipedia bio, why specifically did you want to discuss that poet with me?
Because he is a ridiculously hopeless romantic, very similar to Atticus, but he's a bit more cheesy, and that's just me. I'm a hopeless romantic. My future wife will forever love me, because she will be showered in love constantly, maybe too much.
Yeah. Alrighty then. So yeah, I'm just pulling up the Wikipedia page. Tyler Knott Gregson is a poet, author, and professional photographer based in Helena, Montana. Gregson has accrued fame as a poet on social media platforms such as Tumblr, Instagram, and Twitter since 2009. Gregson studied sociology and criminology at the University of Montana. He worked as a freelance writer for various companies and began blogging on his own in 2009. He says he has written poetry since being in middle school. The typewriter series that he has was born in 2012 when Gregson found an old typewriter in a Helena antique store and typed out a poem spontaneously. He said, "I just did it all at once, and it was like a stream of consciousness. I didn't plan or think through it. I just let it go." The poet now challenges himself to post one of these every single day. So, yeah, so he is definitely one of the earlier ones that really established that that visual aesthetic and motif of like the typewriter. Like he's certainly not the only one, but he's definitely one of them. And he from 2009 or at least 2012, he certainly was probably one of the earliest to do so.
Oh yeah. When you think of the like original people who created the, genre of Insta poetry, he comes to mind along with Atticus and the rest. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So would you like to read your first poem by him?
Yeah, of course. All right, this is the first one. I will be the silhouette in the window light, if you'll be the indentation in the mattress. Some mornings you will rise before me. Some I will count your breaths as I pull shirt sleeves down arms and force my face through the neck of some clothing I will wish I was not wearing. Be the light through the ceiling fan. I'll be the squeak of the reading lamp as it is pulled closer. Be the shower steam, and I'll write your name on the mirror.
Oh, that's good. Again, I can definitely see where he gets his reputation as a hopeless romantic.
Oh, absolutely. And it's so cringy sometimes, but in a really good way.
Yeah, I didn't think of it cringy or like in a cheesy way. Like I thought some of his like imagery and choice of words was pretty sophisticated, at least in that poem.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think I find it hard to, me personally, talk about love and emotions like that. So it's instantly cheesy for me. But yeah, no, I agree. It's very, this one is sophisticated.
Yeah. Alrighty then. So here, let me share one now. Some poets promise eternity, the world, the moon, and the stars in the sky. Some promise immortalization in words and song. Some promise perfection. I've not these to give. I promise patience and the space to know that you are loved precisely as you are.
Oh, he's just so good. He's the only poet where I enjoy everything he writes that it doesn't rhyme. And I just love the loveliness, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I personally, my poetry style is evolving. I can go all over the place, like super structured, super rhyme meter, and then totally, you know, free verse. But to me, a lot of times free verse can be more challenging because you're not relying on the crutch of it sounding pretty just by nature of the rhyme, which means that the content and you put in it matters so much more because the content has to stand on its own because it's a free verse poem.
It's so true, and you're not relying on that, you know, full circle punch that rhymes give you when you're like, "Ooh, that sounds catchy," but the catchiness deters you away from the emotion behind the poem. So yeah, totally agree.
Okay, would you like to share another one?
Yeah, of course. I cannot sleep with you anymore, you said, soft and lost in my quiet arms. Nor I without you, I said, the weight of your head on my chest. We are built to be one, One thing in the dark hours. One breath rising into either above us. Into the ether above us, sorry. Move closer, still closer, until no space exists between us. Until this skin becomes that skin. And all I am is shared with all you are.
Yep, he is certainly romantic. It's just interesting because all the poems I picked, didn't go quite for the hopeless romantic. They tend to like talk about other things. But yeah, I haven't bought any of his books. Is that the gist of what he tends to go for, like in most of his poems?
In this particular book I'm reading from, yeah, it's all very lovey-dovey.
Yeah, which book is that?
Oh, Widely Into the Dark, Typewriter Poems and the Rattlings of a Curious Mind.
Okay, let me pull out another one. Hope you're not a Zen garden kind of girl. Hope you aren't expecting manicured. I'm a junkyard of a mind, collecting all that should be discarded. Did you know decay had a sound? Did you know it never stops? Come for the chaos, but do not grow weary when it overwhelms. Ask me and I will tell you I know where everything was placed.
Oh, I love that one. It's like he's, for me, that just sounded like he's asking whoever he's talking to just see him and, you know, hoping that he will or he will see him. Oh, I love that one. I love the word too.
Yeah, no, I like it. I'm a junkyard of a mind and just the notion of what is trash. And as a pagan, I've started to become more environmentally aware and just, you know, does everything we throw away truly need to be thrown away? Can it be repurposed for something else? And then our idea is that order is good and chaos is evil, but in some ways chaos can be good.
Oh, 100%. And not just that too. Do we need to replace the old things with new things? Do we really need all these things? You know, begs that question. Everything, like you said, has a purpose, and why does it? That junkyard could be someone else's treasure. So, yeah.
Yes, of course. Can you recite your next one?
We were waves, two from two seas, set to smash and collide in the center of the blue. Our colors and currents divided with sea foam. With white stacked to the horizon, watch our water rise to cloud heights. Watch it fall and spread evenly across our split. Here is to the years we spent waiting. Here is to the miles we made our way across. A life spent wondering how your salt would taste.
Interesting. I really like poems that use the water and ocean as a metaphor, especially because I immediately go to emotions, which can rise, which can fall. They can be chaotic, but they can also be tranquil.
It's so true. And just the surfer in me just grabbed this poem and was like, this has to be one of them.
Of course.
Yeah. Anything that's ocean related and it ties in with romance, I'm done. And for me too, it almost, this poem, it's so short, but it tells a story of love's journey with water. And, you know, at the end, it's almost like that moment where you do come together as one, in not just a romantic and spiritual sense, but in a sexual sense as well. That moment that you experience together. So that's why I love that poem.
Alrighty, so since you went with a natural one, I need to follow with another nature-related one. Okay. Canyons between us, acres on acres of divide, of glen, of hours and sting. Oh, were I a bird, winged and slight, a feathered thing to catch, some thermal and be carried to you. Can we fill that place, that valley we shouted across with all those blind to this? Can we let our voices dance above them, tangled and entwined? Can theirs become garbled and dim, vanish into the white noise of stream, of river? Somewhere, miles above the sound of water, the bridge we built, never again will I wish for wings.
It's so interesting, that poem, because for me it sounds like the journey starts with so much uncertainty. And yet, through all that terrain, through all that nature, they've found home. So, you know, he doesn't need to keep traveling anymore. I have a tendency to break down poems in a very simple way, and I take things literally. But yeah, I know I love that. It's so serene.
Yeah, no, I think this is the poem I took Libby most literally, just because I remember visiting the Grand Canyon as a child. And so when I think of canyons, like I think of Grand Canyon in the U.S., I think of Bryce Canyon, and they are huge.
Oh my gosh, they are. Because I've been to America. I stayed on a holiday for 3 months in 2016, and I've seen the Grand Canyon. It does not look real up front. It looks like a big, giant picture. That's how majestic mm-hmm. it is. It's just surreal.
Yes, yes, indeed. And again, the notion of, you know, he was talking about bridging the gap in the valley, like just by being a bird, but then finally a bridge was built. That did that mean that like being free wasn't sufficient enough? Like, did he need more foundation via a bridge? Like, just makes me wonder, like, what is the metaphor for like the relationship?
Yeah. Oh, for me, it just says he found home. Or he's on the right path, maybe even, because if you're flying, there's no real direction. There's no roads to guide you in the air. There's the elements to guide you, but with the bridge, you know exactly where you need to be going.
Can you read your next one, please?
Yeah, of course. The words aren't falling out of my mouth in the same ways anymore. Once they felt like water, they leaked and rose and baptized me new. Halo fresh without the glow. They explode now, confetti in a slight breeze, and I am racing around to pick up the pieces.
Interesting. Like, a lot of imagery that changed very quickly. I'm just trying to picture it.
Oh, I know. And that one related to me the most for currently when I read that again, because I was like, oh, I have such writer's block right now. That's exactly how I feel. I'm trying to pick up all these pieces, and I can't even find some of them right now. So that totally makes sense.
So here, I'm going to read the last one. Bones speak, if you listen. Whisper out truths we hide in marrow, and stubborn blood that won't stop flowing. Listen, they creak out in the sounds they make. This story is not over. There is more here to say. Can't you hear yours? Branches, as bones and roots that embrace the ground that hold you. Isn't it saying the same? The wind in your leaves, as I sleep in your shade. Look how tall you've grown in the years you waited. Mine say this, these long-weighted, winded bones. This road is a ring road, circular and stormy and rough for miles, but a ring road all the same. Every step we take in opposite directions is one step closer to reunion. Home is wherever we meet again, somewhere in the middle.
I totally wasn't following that poem until the very end. And this is one of the things I love about poetry when it comes full circle. There's so much analogy, and it's, you know, you don't have to make sense of all of it. It's just as long as it comes to the end and something clicks in you. And it was just, again, another one that kind of represents home for me, or the journey in between.
Yeah, I think this was my favorite of all of them that I picked, just because I'm currently in a mood where I really appreciate the analogy of the human body with nature. And you know, you'll see those pictures online of how like the veins in a leaf like look almost exactly like, you know, the veins and wrinkles on your hand.
Yeah, oh, that's actually really true. And not just that, being a pagan, that's very pagan for me anyway. You know, mm-hmm. relating, you know, the talk of bones and nature, and there's a lot of bone magic. So yeah, I know, I totally get that.
Yeah. And then also not only from a just general pagan perspective, but also I'm really into like blood and bone analogies right now, because my current collection that I'm working on has been heavily influenced by COVID-19. And so just talking about disease and all of those things. So that's another thing that drew me in.
Oh, that makes that honestly makes total sense. And the blood and bone would really give it that, that guilty punch it needs to really, you know, shoot through to readers. So that's really cool.
Yeah. And especially because the collection's name is called The Vampire in the Mirror. So specifically vampire with blood. Blood is a big theme in that collection.
Yeah, of course. Oh my gosh. That's so cool. Speaking of vampire, the new Twilight book came out yesterday, and I'm just loving that, by the way.
Oh, it came out in Australia?
Yeah. Oh, so good.
Oh, which one? You mean Midnight Sun?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I really enjoyed that. I read the partial version back when she posted it, and you know, when she got really discouraged because someone leaked it. So I have read part of it and I remember very much enjoying it. In fact, I was on Amazon like trying to debate. I'm like, do I need to get it? Do I need it? I know it, but I still want it.
Oh, you totally need it. And then now she needs to do a Jacob perspective and call it Full Moon or something. We just need it.
Yeah, I just really enjoy the cover of Midnight Sun because it's a pomegranate, and I feel that's very much in relation or making an allusion to Hades and Persephone in that legend of her being dragged to the underworld, which is how Edward views himself.
Yeah, no, and obviously the dripping from the pomegranate, it represents his darkness, because reading Midnight Sun, his perception of the events is so much more shadier than Balor's. Mm-hmm. So it's yeah, so totally true. Sorry, mm-hmm. I just totally sidetracked us.
No, this is what makes podcasts great.
Awesome.
Alrighty then. But that's enough with our poetry. So now I'm going to read like some criticisms of Tyler Knott Gregson, and we'll see if we agree with them or not.
Yes, I'm excited for this. Go for it.
So this one is just from a blog. It was specifically for his book Chasers of the Light, which I think was his very first like book that he published.
Yeah.
I came into this book with extremely high hopes after all the good things I heard about it, which I admit isn't necessarily fair to the poet. While I stand behind the statement that I completed this book feeling dissatisfied, I can say I didn't finish this book feeling completely disappointed. Shortly after starting Chasers of the Light, I decided that I wanted to create a system using post-it tags to mark poems that I categorized into loved, liked, unsure, and thought-provoking, so that I could refer back to them in the future while needing to go through the entire book again. Looking back now I've completed, I can say that there's probably around 30 post-its, with most of them meaning loved or liked. So obviously there were some things I actually liked. If I had to say, give the poems of this book a theme, I would definitely say that they're mostly poems of someone who appears to be a hopeless romantic. I understand that there are many people in the world who completely adore this theme, especially those of you who love watching the Hallmark Channel on TV. So in that case, this would be a great poetry choice for those people. However, I'm personally not one of those people, which is why my opinion is admittedly slightly slanted. Like, she heard about it and she thought maybe Gregson could warm her cold heart, but alas, he did not.
That's totally what I got. Look, at the start when you started reading that, I was like, oh, I don't like to agree, but I'm actually kind of agreeing with this. But then the comments of this is like a Hallmark production, I'm like, come on, man. There's no sophistication in Hallmark productions. This dude mm-hmm. is laying out his heart on his sleeve in these pages, so... I agree with some of her points, but ultimately I disagree. It that truly downplays what Gregson's trying to do in his poetry, and that's express the love that he has to give, whether it's with the world or with that one individual. But yeah, unfortunately, the cold heart could not be broken.
Yeah, no, I chose her because she was pretty, she still didn't like it, but she was pretty fair about it. And I'm trying in this podcast to give a balance of someone, even if they're critical, they're being fair about it, and then one who completely tears it up.
Well, that's it. Yeah, look, she was still fair, and she gave it a go. So you can't really fault anyone for that.
Yeah,
but I think ultimately I do disagree.
I appreciate the fact that, you know, she just admits like that this personally isn't for me. And she wasn't necessarily going into the fact that if you like this, then you're dumb. Because that's how a lot of critics of Insta poetry react. If you like this, then you are uncultured, you are uncouth, and all of those things. But she was just saying it was just for different people.
Well, that's it. Yeah. You're totally right. She's saying it just wasn't for me, which is totally fine. I still didn't appreciate the Hallmark comment. I feel like that was her one little jab. No one's like, yeah. Oh. But I'll let you have it. Yeah.
Yeah. So this, I just copy pasted it in my notes. This was a 1-star review of Chasers of the Light that I found on Amazon.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not trying to offend anyone here, but, well, we know it's going to be bad from starting like that.
Oh gosh, here we go.
But this is just poorly written cliches written on scrap paper with a typewriter that is older than the writer. The writer claims that the typewriter helps transcend his thoughts uninterrupted and unedited on to his paper, which is a very poor defense of him using a hipster gimmick. He is using old vintage crap to distract from the fact that he is just writing mediocre elementary poems on recycled napkins. It is a gimmick pure and simple. It insults my intelligence to say that it helps transcend unedited thoughts on paper, as if he included the ones that he screwed up on or something. Unedited my butt. The writer is clearly a narcissist that thinks every single thought he has is worth gold, therefore he writes, he publishes all of them. It's just masturbatory garbage written by a hipster on gimmick paper. So if you think everyone else's life is more interesting than yours, you might like this, i.e. you like reality TV and celebrity gossip, you will love this empty, contentless trash.
I'm just gonna conclude that this person had a really bad day. That's horrible. That's so not fair. Yeah.
Yeah, it's... Again, I don't like when people say, if you like this, then, you know, again, trying to shame people. Like, if you like, you know, reality TV, or if you like celebrity gossip, if you like these trashy things, then you'll like this.
Yeah, I don't think that comparison's fair at all. I think he totally missed the rawness of the process and the fact of writing it on scrap paper. And, you know, that's how your mind feels sometimes. You know, it's picking up these pieces and putting them together. I think he's totally missed the point or the feel of it. And it could not have been for him, so that's fine. But I think without fully looking at it from the other perspective or the other point of view and how it's written and the process, that I'm not even going to acknowledge that.
Yeah. You know, he had the typical criticisms that it was empty cliches and yada, 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 which for me personally, I don't get the whole bad thing about cliches, because as a writer, I come from the perspective of everything has been done before. It just hasn't been done by you.
Right.
So it's okay, you know, because there are only a certain amount of universal concepts and stories and archetypes that within the human condition can draw upon. So the fact that you revert to an old one and use it in your own way, I don't necessarily think that that's a bad thing.
No, not at all. And I think what people forget, just to steer to a business point of view, is that cliches are a part of nostalgia. And nostalgia is the big money maker. People will always endorse what makes them feel happy from years past. There's nothing wrong with that, and because that makes so much money, that just means it's the majority of how people feel. So
and he says, you know, all the things like cliches and stuff like that, but he seems to really hate the typewriter. He calls it a hipster gimmick. Like, he just hates that whole aesthetic. And I'm just wondering why, because especially because he was probably one of the earliest ones. Like, if he was just another, like, if it was a poet now trying to do that same thing as if it was original, that might be one thing. But again, Tyler Knott Gregson, I think, was kind of one of the originals to use that style. So the fact that he was already getting criticized for it, even though not as many people were using it.
Yeah, that does confuse me too. But I will say, it's the one point at the same time that I kind of understood what this critic was saying, is that it is very hipster. And I think, well, now we can identify it as that. So I get it. But yeah, back then, I don't know how he made that correlation so quickly.
Yeah, I guess I'm just trying to step into his shoes. I guess it's just the idea that you think that presenting something in a specific way, again, visually, will distract from the legit content. Like, coming from a purist philosophy that you don't need all these gimmicks, just let the poem speak for itself.
Yeah, it sounds like, to me, it sounds like this person is a scholar who appreciates the traditional formats of writing and publishing, and obviously was offended by the format and style of this writing, which is fine, but yeah, I still think it's an unfair review.
And he just, it's a growing thing I'm seeing in criticism is to poetry, that people think of it as narcissistic and just that poets are writing about themselves and posting it on their own social media. I'm just like, other poets were doing that in the 19th century as well, like not post on Instagram, but, you know, using like I and like other sort of things. So I'm not fully understanding where people are getting the that insta poetry or modern poetry is necessarily more narcissistic than poetry has been in years past.
No, I don't get that either. There's narcissism in everything that we do, because you want your work to get out there so people can not only relate but contact you, so you can, you know, push it forward professionally. So I think that point is void.
Yeah, the very nature of art is narcissistic. If you want to take that position, then all art is narcissistic, because it's not practical. It's, you know, it's about your talent, showing your talent to the world. You know, it's all about you. It's, you know.
It's so true. I 100% agree. From painters and actors and singers right down to writers, it's all of it.
I guess it's the question of death of the author. Like, do we analyze art, you know, from what was the author or artist's intent, or do we just want to interpret the art as is and how it relates in the world, irrespective of what the artist particularly wanted?
Yeah, well, I think that's the beauty of writing. It's so diverse in how you interpret it. You could do anything. You could dissect it as the writer. You could dissect it as the consumer. Giving one thing to you, another to other. It's another to another. It's fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, and especially now there are a lot of people discussing this concept about art and the consumption of like art and writing, particularly in regards to like the whole Harry Potter fandom trying to reconcile J.K. Rowling's transphobia.
Yeah. Oh, side note, unpopular opinion, I don't like the Harry Potter books.
You can leave now.
Yeah. I knew you were going to say that. I love the movies. But it's one book series that I tried and I couldn't. Yeah. I don't know what it is.
That's odd, which is you're about my age. So you were a kid when Harry was a kid and grew up with it. So that is interesting. So yeah, then you can disregard my Harry Potter podcast that I'm probably going to start next year.
I'm so sorry. Yeah, every time someone asks me for my opinion on Harry Potter at work, I'm just like, please don't, because I don't feel like being yelled at today.
You know, one thing I love about Harry Potter podcast is throughout like a variety of them, because a lot of them feature hosts where one person loves it and the other person is just starting it. And it's a lot of times they're one of those people where I don't like it or proud of not liking it. And then they read it in the podcast and they end up loving it.
Well, that's it. Yeah. I mean, even now recently, because I work in a bookstore, I even tried it again just to like, come on, Matt, you're a book lover. Love this book. And it just didn't work. So I don't know what it is.
Well, again, the first few books are very whimsical, magical. But then by the latter half of the series, you know, shit starts to get real. But anyway, we digress. But yeah,
yes.
We both are in agreement that Tyler, not Gregson, is pretty good, pretty raw in his poetry, and that I don't think it's mindless narcissistic drabble the way that one guy seemed to think it was.
No, definitely not. And look, I will give some critics, I guess, a bone. Some of the writing is just it is a little repetitive, and I was just like, oh, come on, give me something new. So sometimes I do find myself skimming over maybe two or three pages to get to some of the really good stuff he's written. So you do get that, but I think that's with every writer. They've always got that little slump there.
Yeah, I think so. I think so too. But so now we're going to move on to our exercise, hashtag Insta poetry. So do you have your phone ready?
I do, yes.
Okay, so I want you to do is search the hashtag Insta poetry.
Yep, done.
And don't do the top ones. Go to the most recent ones.
Oh, recent. Okay.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm all about discovering new talent.
All right. And are we just going to pick the very top one, or we're just going to do random?
Like, you know, one that piques your interest that's near the top.
All right.
So I'll start with this one is by Sherry May. I don't hate my old self. I'm sorry for the old me, but I'm also happy and thankful because if it's not because of her, her doings, her decisions, and her mindset, I wouldn't be who I am today. I've learned a lot in life thanks to my old self.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's beautiful as a quote, but the way it's like structured, like stanza-wise, I don't really come across it as a poem. Like, So for me, it's lukewarm.
No, I do agree. It's beautiful and it made my heart feel warm. But at the same time, a quote, as soon as you say quote, I'm like, yeah, that is a quote. It's like that's something at the end of a speech that you would give.
Mm-hmm. Here's another one. Killing Hours by Hector_Verse. We kill the hours of these tyrannical beds soaked. Our bodies murmuring cold rain and the unwashed stain of moonlight. Don't condescend to judge me, you up. To smear, close your eyes, build a nest with your pieces. I gather the warm body sleeping. The smell of her hair murders my heart. I drown in the hyacinth of her skin. I scream in the darkness of her moans. Damn, that one's good.
That one really is good. Oh, that made
yeah,
that
like okay.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, go ahead. I'm just following him right now.
Oh, also, that instantly transported me to the bullshit I went through with my best friends. Like, instantly.
Oh,
damn, that got me. And the she thing at the end, I don't know if that's a person or if that's Mother Nature or if that's the elements. Like, it's so mysterious at the same time.
Yeah, and I especially like, and the unwashed stain of moonlight. Like, I really love when people... Oh. You know, combine words in that you wouldn't even, that you would never use in like normal speech, but it still makes so much sense and is beautiful.
Yeah, it's so true. What was that Instagram handle again?
Hector_Verse.
I'm also going to follow him. Killing Hours. Oh, no, that was really good. Good choice.
Okay. And yeah, you pick one.
The first one I picked just happened to be about mermaids. So I was like, let's go.
Of course.
It's Untitled by Adira J, handle Bored Poetess.
Mm-hmm.
A beach with sands, blanched. A fairy without her wings is powerless. A mermaid without her fins is broken. The sea witches are silent, and she cannot even trade her few. She cannot even trade her few listless scales for a minute full of freedom. Now the love is dried seaweed on a chipped dinner plate, and the days are alarms set against the tide.
Oh, that one's also good.
I really liked it. Although I'm not... The whole dinner plate thing took me out of it. I was really into the mysticism of the mermaids in the sea. And I get the dinner plate analogy, but I don't want it there.
I totally got it and I totally dug it because, again, it's going from the mysticism and just everything and then realizing, you know, this, you know, magic of the sea and the ocean and then the reality of, you know, the fish ends up on our plate to eat.
Well, yeah, that's so true. And the alarms set against the tide, obviously, the damage we're doing is how mm-hmm. I ended that, yeah. Oh, no, it is really good. Oh, I'm glad.
The only problem with the Insta poetry hashtag exercise is a lot of them are not in English and I cannot read them.
Yeah, I know. And I love the rare Insta poets that do their own art along with it, and it just takes your breath away. Oh, love mm-hmm. it. I'm going to try and pick another one quickly for you.
Yeah, pick another one.
All right, here comes Hopeless Romance by Autumn of Words. I know we are not on speaking terms with each other, but I'm dying to be in your arms, to see you like the first time, to stroke your cheek and play with your hair, to drown in your love and soak in your scent, to kiss every inch and every curve, to bathe in you and feel peace again. I'm dying to be with you before I finally die. Oh. That was a bit morbid.
Yeah, that was morbid. Like, I liked the kind of flow of it, but I just felt I would have appreciated a little more original metaphors.
Yeah, it was. It's been done before, hasn't it?
It has been done. Like, again, my personal philosophy is that there's nothing wrong with going cliched, but just put a twist on a cliche. That's all.
Yeah, correct. I felt like the twist was before I finally die, but it was like, whoa, you went from here way down to here.
Yeah. Alrighty then, here's one more I found. Or mid-age poetry, okay. It's hard not to think about you most days, though I try to maintain a veil of distraction. Through work and laughter, driving is the worst for a scattered mind. Sleep is a reprieve, but only when you don't visit me there and I come alive. Interesting. I like the veil of distraction. One thing that really just really that irks me is the it's. They did not put the apostrophe like you should for it is.
Oh yeah. Oh no. the punctual Nazis will always come out. That's for sure.
But even later in the poem, it says when you don't has the apostrophe.
Oh no, he missed so many. I shouldn't talk. I make so many grammatical errors. It's not funny.
Well, it's just. you know, I can get people like Rookie Core who they don't capitalize I, and like, if that's their style, that's their style. But you gotta be consistent, man.
Oh, so true, so true.
That like, if it's a stylistic choice, okay, it's a stylistic choice, but, you know, don't half-ass it if, you know, whatever.
Yeah, agreed. Look at your previous work and redo that, but obviously with different poems. The only thing that made me feel weird, which is why I like the anything that makes me feel weird in poetry, I like. And it made me feel weird because it said something like, driving is not good for a scattered mind. But for me, driving is good for a scattered mind. So I was like, why do you feel that way? I want to know more.
Yeah. Because, yeah, my mind is constantly scattered when I'm driving. I can only center it when I'm listening to a Jane Austen audiobook or a Harry Potter podcast.
Yeah. Or do you listen to those, like, scary story podcasts where people submit it on Reddit and then the narrator narrates it? Love those.
Oh, no, I have not.
They're great. They're really big on YouTube.
I tend not to be in modern ghost stories. Like, my whole thing at the moment is, like, classic gothic literature.
As it should be. No, this is more about, like, how people have had close encounters with, like, kidnappings and assault and things like that. It's really creepy. And they get away, of course. It's always happy endings. But, yeah, it's just creepy at the time.
So that wraps up all our activities for this episode. Thank you so much, Matthew, for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a lot of fun.
Yes, and listeners, tune in next time, and we will have another guest speaker poet to discuss another Insta poet. Bye.
Bye.